We're headed into the kitchen and cooking with the fall harvest on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What's a fall vegetable you've recently tried that inspired your recipes? How do you use root vegetables? What about cranberries? We're at 800-642-1234. James Shend is deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine in Milwaukee, and he joins us from our Milwaukee studios. James, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you have a recipe that makes use of something we know here a little bit in Wisconsin, and that is cranberries. Tell us about your cranberry wild rice pilaf.
What I love about this dish is it's a little bit unexpected. Most people know that Wisconsin is the top grower of cranberries in the country. We do produce a fair amount of wild rice as well as our neighbors in Minnesota. And so this is a great way to combine both of those dishes. It's a great fall dish to have, but it's also really elegant enough that you can put it on your Thanksgiving or holiday table, and it just fits right in. Real easy to make. It's only about 7 ingredients, so it's something you can put together really, really fast.
But wild rice can be tricky.
It can be. You just have to cook it low and slow and very gentle, and it usually turns out really, really well. You just need that time. It's nothing that you're going to do really quickly. So you just have to plan for it. Like, this bakes in the oven for about an hour, and so you just have to plan accordingly.
When do the cranberries go in?
Cranberries go in right at the beginning.
Okay.
And so we just toss everything in, pour it into a baking dish, and then just the cranberries go in right at the end.
Oh, okay.
I take it back. I am corrected. It's a little early in the morning.
That's okay. And so you actually end up baking this pilaf in the oven. Is that more like finishing it off?
Yeah, so it's the last step you're going to do. You're going to add cranberries and almonds to it just before you serve it. And so the cranberries don't need a whole lot of time to heat up. We're using dried cranberries in this particular dish, but there's a lot of great things you can do with fresh cranberries.
We're looking at recipes here, and this one is for the cranberry pilaf, which is at WPR.org/mornings. James, what produce do we have here in Wisconsin that we should really make use of as the temperatures cool off?
Well, the fall is the great time of year for a lot of the harder squashes, so things like butternut squash, acorn squash. They're all coming into season, and they're the ones that you should be looking for. You're going to start to see tomatoes dwindling really quickly now, but you can still get some good ones. And the zucchinis and stuff, they're probably all gone. So we're going to be looking at a lot of the squashes, a lot of produce like apples, pears, those that are common right about now. So those are the ones that you should be seeking out, and they're the absolute freshest and best tasting you can look for.
What do you like to do with your squash?
Pretty much anything. The simplest technique that I like to do is just peel a butternut squash, slice it up, and then just toss it with a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, and roast it. And it's as simple as that. And it just takes a couple of minutes to do, so maybe about 30 minutes in the oven to get tender, depending on how thin you slice it.
Well, let's take a call. Chris is joining us from Adams. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I have this fabulous recipe. The first thing you do is you make a cranberry relish, and this is based pretty much on Susan Stamberg's
recipe that she puts
on the air every year. They make her come back to put this on the air. But it's basically you saute some garlic and onions in the bottom of a pan, and then you throw in a can of frozen condensed pineapple orange juice, and then put in a bag of fresh cranberries. And then when that's all cooked up, you throw in like a handful of fresh ginger and a handful of horseradish. And I like to put in as much horseradish as I can tolerate. And you can jar this up and keep it you can either can it or you can put it in your freezer for the winter. But the recipe is, you saute some more onions and garlic in the bottom of a pan, and then you put in about 2 cups of dry sherry and a bunch of wild rice. And then you make a trivet. You quarter an onion and put it in there, and you slice some sweet potatoes, like really thick, and put those in. And then you put chicken on top of that, whatever you want to use. I usually use thighs, but you can do that skin side up. And you put that in the oven and bake it at like 325 until the chicken is done. And then when that's all done, you put the cranberry relish on top of it, stick it under the broiler,
and
caramelize it a little bit. You got to watch it at this point because it'll burn. But you caramelize it a little bit, and it's absolutely delicious.
Oh, Chris, that sounds absolutely amazing. And she's using like everything from the fall harvest. I mean,
exactly.
I'm just ticking it off my list here. Chris, thank you so much. James, what do you love to use ginger for? Where do you use ginger in your cooking?
Oh, just about anywhere. I mean, that's one of those ingredients that straddles everything from desserts to appetizers and anything in between. You see it commonly in a lot of desserts like gingerbread and things like that this time of year. But it's great in like stews and chilies and chutneys. And it's great fresh, dried, powdered, you name it. It's a wonderful ingredient. I like to use it. A little bit of it goes a really long way. And like the easiest, simplest thing you can do is just slice just one or two slices from it and drop it in a glass of hot water. I mean, very simple for a quick tea. But you can also put it into oatmeal, which I do pretty much every morning, fresh or dried. And it's just one of those great ingredients that goes with almost absolutely everything.
So along with your ginger in your oatmeal, I have to ask, what else is in that oatmeal?
Well, this time of year, I'm usually tossing in some cranberries because you can find those fresh cranberries now, and I'll cook them up with the oatmeals because I usually do the Irish oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does take a little bit longer to cook. So about halfway through, I'll toss in about a handful of fresh cranberries, and they'll have enough time to cook and almost pop and explode a little bit. And so it flavors the whole thing. A little bit of fresh ginger, maybe a touch of cinnamon if you got it. So that's one of those things. And always some toasted nuts, usually pecans.
And does your oatmeal keep? What do you do with the leftovers?
Oh, so I usually make a big batch like on Sunday, and then I'll put it all into one container, bring it to work, and then I'll be eating from that, just microwave it for about a minute or so, and it holds beautifully.
And then you have food for the whole week.
Exactly.
James Shend is with us. He's deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. It's based out of Milwaukee. Where do you go to find quality vegetables here in Wisconsin? Where do you find the freshest stuff? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Sarah now, joining us from Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to mention the noble turnip because I like turnips a lot, and I discovered this recipe in a Jacques Pepin cookbook for sweet potato soup, and it had turnips also, and you couldn't even really notice that there were turnips in it, but it just made the soup a lot more interesting, and I think there was like chicken broth and shallots and
but the turnips were in there, but in it slightly disguised. Sarah?
I don't know if you say disguise, but they were just, when you ate it, you didn't think, oh, turnip soup.
You didn't think of turnip soup. James, you know, she calls it the noble turnip.
The noble, I love that term. To me, the turnip, the rutabaga, the parsnip, those are all those what I would call noble or grandma heirloom vegetables. They're awesome vegetables that a lot of people just kind of discount. They're not the real popular ones, and to me, those are the ones that you should be seeking out. What I found fascinating last year is I went to a number of restaurants in Milwaukee and Madison and kind of across the country and was kept seeing parsnips. Parsnips were everywhere, and a lot of people were doing very, very interesting things. One of the ones that I saw that was very intriguing was a tempura battered and then fried parsnip. And I'm like, this is a great way to elevate what those more mild vegetables are and something that you can pick up pretty inexpensively. And as Sarah mentioned, the turnip kind of is one of those background flavors. You don't really notice it a lot. It's great to kind of mix into like mashed potatoes. So just dice them up with your regular potatoes, put them in the simmering water, and then mash it all up. And you don't really even know that they're there, but you're hiding in one of those vegetables.
And you're hiding also in some, you know, some extra nutrients as well.
Exactly, yeah.
So where do you go to find all of your fresh fall produce? Where do you like to find it?
Right now, it's everywhere. That's what I love about this. There's a lot of great farmers markets still going on, and so you can find those. I just did a quick search, and I'm finding great farmers markets everywhere from Rhinelander down to Kenosha. So there's a lot of places you can go right around where I'm down in Kenosha right now, but there's a lot of orchards that are popping up, they're established, but they have produce stands now in them. And so you can go and have the fun and go to the corn maze and do the apple picking and things. But they also are providing a lot of fresh produce this time of year. So those are great places to go. So just keep checking your local areas.
So when you pick out produce, do you look at the size? How do you evaluate the quality of it?
So I'm one of these people that tends to gravitate towards the imperfect or ugly produce just because I know that it's still a good quality piece of fruit or vegetable, and it doesn't usually cost as much. And it's like if you go to a grocery store, they usually push those off to a side, or a farmer's market, you can kind of get the dented, dinged kind of discount on those, but they're still really good, high-quality products, and you're not looking for those beautiful, the perfect magazine-quality looking of an apple.
We're in the kitchen preparing dishes inspired from the fall harvest with Taste of Home Deputy Editor John Shend. He's our guide. Maybe you've connected with a farm through a CSA and you have a box of winter squash and beets, potatoes, leeks that you want to know what to do with. Join in for your recipe ideas, 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more Wisconsin Weekend in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're in the kitchen for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And as the days get shorter, we're getting some recipe ideas for meals with our fall harvest produce all around us. Classic way to prepare root vegetables is to roast them in the oven with olive oil and salt, but you might have better ideas for beets and onions. Let's talk about your favorite recipe ideas, 800-642-1234. James Shend stays with us. He's deputy editor at Taste of Home. Let's go to Dan now, joining us from Cascade, Iowa. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What are you doing with your cherries, may I ask?
Well, my wife and I enjoy planting various things, and we do it mostly by, oh, that plant looks neat. So we saw this ground cherry plant, and we thought, well, that's cool. So we planted that, and we have all these ground cherries, and I have no clue what to do with them. And I opened up one of the fruits, and I looked at it, and it didn't look like much to me. I tossed it on the ground, and our chickens pecked it, and they walked away. So I'm like, well, that's, I didn't know if that's a clue or something, that these things are edible.
James, what would you do with those ground cherries?
Oh, I mean, they're fascinating. I love just eating them. I mean, it's something that it's one of those things you don't normally see. So it's something that you're going to have to find either growing wild or you intentionally plant, because it is cool looking. And honestly, I have not done a whole lot with them. I've had them a couple of times just fresh. You can puree them. One of the things that popped to mind immediately was like a salsa. Just make like a fruit salsa, just chop them up and things like that. I've seen them in pies, and try them with an appetizer, like a goat cheese, just sliced fresh, or you could even do a quick pickle. So just take out the seeds, chop them up very coarsely in big chunks is what I kind of like to do, and then heat up like a sweeter vinegar, like a red wine vinegar or even a champagne vinegar, maybe a little bit of spice in there, like cinnamon or cloves, even a pumpkin pie spice, and then just quickly pour it over the cherries, and then just let it sit for about 10 minutes, and you're good to go. And then just match it up with like a nice fresh Wisconsin goat cheese or nice cheddar.
Dan, how does that sound?
Awesome. That sounds great. Right up my alley. I like simple things like that.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for calling in.
Produce.
Yeah, and James, you know, let's look at Brussels sprouts here for a moment. You know, I usually just go with putting them with some olive oil and kosher salt. But what can we do with your Brussels sprout recipe?
Well, I love Brussels sprouts. This is one of those vegetables that we never had growing up as a kid because my mother hated them. So we never actually saw them. And so when I first discovered them, I was like 22. And I'm like, this is a fascinating vegetable. And one of the things that I really, really love to do is just take them, cut them in half, and then shred them. So you just chop them really, really finely. And then I'll throw them into a hot wok or a cast iron skillet that has no oil in it whatsoever, just a dry skillet, and then cook them for a couple of minutes. And I'm looking to get a little bit of a char on there. And then I'll add some olive oil or sesame oil, salt, pepper, garlic, whatever you really want to throw in there is great, even dried cranberries or fresh cranberries if you want. And it's a very quick dish. It comes together in about 5 minutes. And it's so, so good.
We have a recipe for your shredded ginger Brussels sprouts as well on our page. You know, it sounds like a little bit as you experiment that you're able to kind of come up with a different taste each time you try these recipes with fall vegetables.
Exactly. And I mean, that's what I love about that Brussels sprout recipe is I don't make it the same way twice. When I put it in the magazine a couple of years ago, I'm like, I actually had to write something down and put it in there. And so we ended up with the ginger. And but I do that every conceivable way. There's nuts that go in it sometimes. Sometimes I'll add in some shredded like butternut squash. It's a very versatile thing.
And putting it in a dry skillet, too, you know, that's kind of different as well. Nothing is weighing it down.
Exactly. It's a classic Asian cooking technique. You want to kind of get a little bit of a char first. And as long as you keep stirring it, you're good to go. And then the oil is actually going to be a flavor carrier. It's not going to help not stick to the pan, but it's going to be more for the flavor.
Well, James, this has been fun. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
James Shund is deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, and he joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. And we have recipes for the cranberry wild rice pilaf and that shredded gingered Brussels sprouts that I want to try tonight. Other recipes as well at WPR.org/mornings. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about an iconic food stand in southwest Wisconsin.
Pete's Hamburger Stand in Prairie du Chien hit a milestone this year, 110 years in business. Not only have multiple generations of families been enjoying these burgers on the weekends for more than a century, but generations of Pete's descendants have been flipping burgers, grilling onions, and running the stand during that time. WPR's Mary Kate McCoy recently visited Pete's to find out what makes the burgers so special.
All right, and two burgers and a drink will be $10.25.
When you step up to order at Pete's Hamburger Stand, you'll notice there's only four things on the menu. Soda, water, chips, and a hamburger.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.
Hi.
And the recipe is simple. Quality ground beef, nope. Onions, a little salt. Oh, and water? For generations, regulars have been lining up for their beloved hamburgers at Pete's. Just listen to a few of them.
They're good.
Kind of like a White Castle, but a bigger White Castle. Definitely more meat. It's good. Love them.
They're unique and different and healthy.
Nobody can beat them.
Try it once.
The stand in downtown Prairie du Chien looks like it's straight out of the 1920s. It's tiny, with green and white awning and sliding windows you walk up to place your order. And inside is Pete's granddaughter, cooking the burgers exactly the way he did more than a century ago.
My name is Mary Hoosier. I am the granddaughter of Pete Gokey, the founder of Pete's Hamburger Stand. We're 110 years old this season.
Locals say it's the best burger around. On the day I stopped by, almost as soon as the sign flipped to open, there was a line. So what keeps people coming back?
The water keeps the burgers nice and moist. Our pan doesn't have a drain in it, so we don't clean it till the end of the day. We just keep adding water and onions and meat all day, and it just makes for a good recipe.
Mary's husband, Bill Hoosier, also cooks at the stand. He says each burger leaves behind a little more flavor as it cooks.
gets better. A lot of people won't eat off the first pan. They claim it doesn't taste as good. So.
Before Pete's became a permanent stand in the 1920s, the original Pete, who was also a volunteer firefighter, sold his burgers from a cart at festivals and fairs. He noticed the burgers stayed juicy when he cooked them in water as the customers ebbed and flowed. The recipe hasn't changed since.
What? Onions on it? No? Okay.
Today, the stand, which is open Friday through Sunday, goes through a couple hundred pounds of meat each day and up to 500 pounds of onions over the weekend. Mary cooks anywhere from 55 to 65 burgers at a time. And while that might sound like a lot, they were gone in a flash the day I visited.
What's it like to be cooking hamburgers when you stay that long?
Well, on some days, it's all right if the weather is cool. On hot days, it can be very exhausting. By the end of your shift, you are ready to go home.
But Mary and Bill say there's something special about having to wait in line to get your burger.
Coming to a stand like this where you have to wait probably, and it's something most people are not used to, or not anymore at least, and it's kind of nostalgic, and people talk in line when they're standing waiting, and it's amazing the connections that they can find, you know, between people that are usually strangers, and sometimes they aren't when they leave here, so that's kind of neat.
The Hoosiers are big on community, not only in how they source their products with local meat and buns, but they also donate all proceeds from their bag chip sales to people in the community fighting cancer. Bill and Mary say hard work, perseverance, and a quality product are what have kept the business going for so long. As for what the original Pete might think about making it 110 years...
I think he'd be very proud of his children and grandchildren.
So whether you like your burgers with onions or without, just don't ask for cheese. The Hoosiers hope you'll enjoy the burgers and meet some new friends along the way.
Well, I just hope that they come here and they get their money's worth. You know, they feel that they've gotten the product that's worth what they've paid for, and they've gotten good service. And hopefully along the way, the environment added to it just makes it fun, even if you have to stand in line.
WPR's Mary Kate McCoy is a digital content producer and brought us that story on Pete's Hamburgers, which has been open in Prairie du Chien for 110 years. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition here of Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Give us a tip at Wisconsin Weekend and Mornings at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.